Cassette number 21, side 1, a treatise on cosmic fire, continuing section 2, division D, thought and fire elementals, on page 872. The following are the three basic mysteries of the solar system. 1. The mystery of electricity, the mystery of Brahma, the secret of the third aspect, it is latent in the physical sun. 2. The mystery of polarity, or of the universal sex impulse, the secret of the second aspect, it is latent in the heart of the sun, i.e., in the subjective sun. 3. The mystery of fire itself, or the dynamic central systemic force, the secret of the first aspect, it is latent in the central spiritual sun. These three mysteries, which we have touched upon above, come, in a peculiar sense, under the jurisdiction of certain great lords or existences, and they have much to do with the revealing of the mystery to those prepared initiates who come under their influence during the final stages of the path. Page 873. The mystery of electricity has three keys, each of which is held in the hands of one of the Buddhas of activity. Theirs is the prerogative to control the electrical forces of the physical plane, and theirs the right to direct the three major streams of this type of force in connection with our present globe. These three streams are concerned with atomic substance, out of which all forms are constructed. In connection with our chain, there are three mysterious entities, of whom our three Pratyeka Buddhas are but the earth reflections, who perform a similar function in connection with the electrical forces of the chain. In the scheme, the planetary Logos has also three cooperating existences, who are the summation of his third aspect, and who perform, therefore, work similar to that performed by the three aspects of Brahma in the solar system. The mystery of this threefold type of electricity is largely connected with the lesser builders, with the elemental essence in one particular aspect, its lowest and most profound for men to apprehend, as it concerns the secret of that which substands or stands back of all that is objective. In a secondary sense, it concerns the forces in the ethers, which are those which energize and produce the activities of all atoms. Another type deals with the electrical phenomenon which finds its expression in the light which man has somewhat harnessed, in the phenomena such as thunderstorms and the manifestation of lightning with the aurora borealis, and in the production of earthquakes and all volcanic action. All these manifestations are based on electrical activity of some kind and have to do with the soul of things, or with the essence of matter. The old commentary says, quote, "The garment of God is driven aside by the energy of his movements, and the real man stands revealed, yet remains hidden, for who knows the secret of a man as it exists in his own self-recognition?" Close quote. Page 874. The mystery of electricity deals with the garment of God, just as the mystery of polarity deals with his form. In the mystery of polarity, we have three different types of force manifesting, and thus it is apparent that the two mysteries deal with the six forces. These three types of force are manipulated by the Buddhas of love. They, through their sacrifice, concern themselves with the problem of sex or of magnetic approach on all the planes. The Buddha of whom we speak and who contacts his people at the full moon of Vaisak is one of the three connected with our globe, having taken the place of one who passed on to higher work in connection with the chain, for the same hierarchical grading is seen as in connection with the Buddhas of action. One group might be considered the divine carpenters of the planetary system, the other the divine assemblers of its parts, and the ones who, through the magnetic influence they wield, unite the diversities and build them into form. The present ideas anent sex must be transmuted and raised from the existing lower connotation to its true significance. Sex in the three worlds has to do with the work of the lunar petries and the solar lords. It signifies essentially the form-building work in substance and its energizing by the spiritual aspect. It signifies the elevation of the material aspect through the influence of spirit, as the two together perform their legitimate function in cooperation, and thus by their mutual union and blending produce the sun in all his glory. This method of interpreting it is equally true of all the existences manifesting on any plane, systemic and cosmic. Certain factors enter into the thought of sex which might be enumerated as follows. Page 875. A. Mutual attraction. B. Complementary suitability. C. Instinctual appeal. D. Approach and recognized cooperation. E. Union. F. The next stage is the temporary importance of the material aspect, that of the mother, the feminine aspect. G. The withdrawal into a temporary retirement of the father. H. The work of creating the son. I. The evolution and growth of the son, both materially and in consciousness. J. Emancipation of the son from his mother, or the liberation of the soul at maturity from matter. K. Recognition by the son of the father and his return to that father. The final result of all these successive stages being that all the three aspects have performed their functions, their dharma, on the physical plane, and all three have demonstrated certain types of energy. The father aspect manifests in giving the initial impulse, or the positive electrical demonstration, which is the germ of the created son, and whose life is embodied in the son. The occult significance of the words of the Christ in answer to the cry, "Lord, show us the Father," is little appreciated. "He that has seen me has seen the Father, for I and my Father are one," he said. The mother, or the negative aspect, builds and nourishes, guards and cherishes the son through the antenatal and the infant stages, and stands around him during later stages, giving of the energy of her own body and activity in ministry to his need. Page 876. The son, the combined energy of father and of mother, embodies both types and all the dual sets of qualities, but has a character all his own, an essence which is his peculiar nature, and an energy which leads him to fulfill his own ends and projects, and which will eventually cause him to repeat the process of producing 1. Conception, 2. Creation, 3. Conscious growth, as did his father. When we reach the mystery of fire, we are concerned with that mysterious extra-systemic energy which is the basis of both the activity of mother and the life of the son. The son, in very deed, becomes his mother's husband, as say the ancient scriptures. This is but an enigmatical phrase unless interpreted in terms of the combination of energy. Only when the son has reached maturity and knows himself as essentially the same as the father, can he consciously perform his father's function and produce and perpetuate that which is needed for the sustaining of cosmic generation. The electricity of substance, the electricity of form, and the electricity of life itself must blend and meet before the true man, whether logos or human being, realizes himself as creator. Man at this stage knows somewhat of the electricity of substance and is coming to the belief as to the electricity of form, even though as yet he calls it magnetism, but as yet he knows naught of the electrical reality of life itself. Only when the jewel in the lotus is about to be revealed, or the third circle of petals is about to open up, does the initiate begin to have a realization of the true meaning of the word life or spirit. The consciousness has to be fully awakened before he can ever understand that great energizing something of which the other types of energy are but expressions. Page 877. There are only two more points to be considered in connection with the petals and initiation. First, it should be noted that the words knowledge, love, and sacrifice mean much more occultly than the apparent significance of the terms. Each circle of petals stands for one of these three ideas, and each circle again embodies these three aspects of existence in a greater or lesser degree. These three concepts are the modes of expression of the three great qualities which, from the standpoint of the past, the present, and the future, characterize the natures of all the manifesting entities, gods, men, and devas. From the standpoint of the central factor in manifestation, man, it should be realized that knowledge was inherent in the previous solar system and is the faculty of which he has to avail himself. It is there available for his use. It is the hidden energy of the planetary logos which he has to learn to focus through his physical brain and thus apply. Love is the faculty inherent in the present. It is the hidden energy of the planetary logos of which he must avail himself and focus in his heart center and thus apply. Sacrifice is the faculty which will be his in the future, which he will intelligently focus through the highest head center and thus apply. It is dependent upon his development of consciousness and therefore upon his recognition of the esoteric purpose of his group and of the planetary existences, as it involves what is termed a solar and lunar act of abnegation. It involves, therefore, a due comprehension of solar and of lunar energy and a bringing of both these two groups to a stage of cooperative activity. It concerns, therefore, the nature of the jewel in the lotus, and it is only when the three sacrifice petals in the three tiers are unfolded that this particular type of energy is released. The lunar lords of the three bodies have been controlled and their vibration synchronized so that the great act of sacrifice finds them ready for the final process of renunciation. Page 878. The solar lords, in their three major groups, are equally ready for the final sacrifice, which involves the rupture between the sun and the moon, as it is called. This results in the breaking of the magnetic link between the true man and the vibratory sensitive substance of which his three world bodies are made. The need for incarnation is no longer felt. The chains of karma are broken, and the man is liberated. The lunar lords return to their own place, or, as the Christian expresses it, Satan is bound for 1,000 years. This meaning only that pralayic peace is the lot of these entities until the return of manvantaric opportunity. The final sacrifice involves also the disappearance of the lower triangle, or the severing of the connection between the three permanent atoms in the lower part of the causal body, or egoic lotus, and the central unit of energy. The energy of these atoms is set loose through the intense heat produced by the union of the three fires and is reabsorbed into the general reservoir in interplanetary space. The fiery triangle is lost sight of in the general blaze, and the deva essences who temporarily formed it cease their activity. Again, the solar angels complete their initial sacrifice by a final one and offer themselves upon the fiery altar. The causal body is completely destroyed. The four lower groups of solar petries return to the heart of the subjective sun, or to that inmost center of the system from whence they came, whilst the three higher groups are carried by the force and energy generated in the fiery furnace and blaze, and through the stimulation produced by the blazing forth of the central jewel, straight to the central spiritual sun, there to abide until another kalpa calls them forth to sacrifice themselves, this time as planetary logoi. The student must bear in mind that in thinking of the petries, he must ever think in group terms. Page 879. The petries who formed the egoic body of a human being do not, alone and isolated, form planetary logoi. The 49 groups of solar fires concerned in the great work are those spoken of, and they become the 49 planetary logoi in connection with 7 solar systems. In them is hid the mystery of the three who become the 16, united or synthesized by the 17th, a correspondence upon cosmic levels of the 7 with the 8th sphere. This must remain practically an insoluble mystery to man at present. The four groups who found their way to the heart of the system will reappear as the 4 planetary logoi, who are the 28, and who thus produce the possibility of the 10 of perfection in another series of manifesting systems. The 7 types of solar energy find the path of return to their central emanating source. By the disruption of the tie between them and the lunar lords, who are esoterically spoken of as dead or dying on the field of battle, the great sacrifice is consummated, and they are free to return in triumph. The occult significance of these words in connection with the energy standing behind and working through all appearance might be expressed as follows. Knowledge is the right apprehension of the laws of energy, of the conservation of force, of the sources of energy, of its qualities, its types, and its vibrations. Footnote 1. There are 7 branches of knowledge mentioned in the Puranas. 2. The Gnosis, the hidden knowledge, is the 7th principle. The 6 schools of Indian philosophy are the 6 principles. These 6 schools are A. The school of logic, proof of right perception. B. The atomic school, system of particulars, elements, alchemy, and chemistry. C. The Sankhya school, system of numbers, the materialistic school, the theory of the 7 states of matter, or Prakriti. D. The school of yoga, union, the rule of daily life, mysticism. E. The school of ceremonial religion, ritual, worship of the devas or gods. F. The Vedanta school, has to do with non-duality, deals with the relation of Atman in man to the Logos. 3. There are 4 branches of knowledge to which HPB specially refers. These 4 are probably those with which man has dealt the most in this 4th round and 4th chain. The 4 noble truths, the 4 Vedas, the 4 Gospels, the 4 basic admissions, the 4 ready elements, the 4 grades of initiation. A. Yajna Vidya, the performance of religious rites in order to produce certain results. Ceremonial magic, it is concerned with sound, therefore with the Akasha or the ether of space. The Yajna is the invisible deity who pervades space. Perhaps this concerns the physical plane. B. Mahavidya, the great magic knowledge. It has degenerated into tantrika worship, deals with the feminine aspect or the matter mother aspect. The basis of black magic, true Mahayoga, has to do with the form, second aspect, and its adaptation to spirit and its needs. Perhaps this concerns the astral plane. C. Guhavidya, the science of mantrams, the secret knowledge of mystic mantrams, the occult potency of sound of the word. Perhaps this concerns the mental plane. D. Atma Vidya, true spiritual wisdom. 4. Knowledge of truth is a common inheritance. 5. Knowledge is a relative subject and varies according to the grade achieved. A. Ranges of further knowledge open up before a planetary logos. B. The 4 truths can be arrived at by unaided man. 6. Finally, knowledge is a dangerous weapon. This is due to personal selfishness. It is only safe when A. One gives oneself up to it, body, soul, and spirit. B. One has an unshakable belief in one's own divinity. C. One recognizes one's own immortal principle. D. One knows oneself. E. All the virtues are practiced. F. One has experience. G. One realizes knowledge is the fruit of spirit alone. H. Knowledge is acquired through the region of the higher mind. From The Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. Return to text. Page 880. It involves an apprehension of A. The different key vibrations. B. The centers whereby force enters. C. The channels along which it circulates. Page 881. D. The triangles and other geometrical figures which it produces during evolution. E. The cycles and the ebb and flow of energy in connection with the different types of planetary manifestation, including all the kingdoms of nature. F. The true significance of those force aspects which we call periods of pralaya and those we call periods of manifestation. It also involves a right realization of the laws of obscuration. All this the man has been learning in the various halls through practical experience involving pleasure and pain. These, in the final initiations, bring him to a realization not only of the existence of these forces, but of how to wield and manipulate them. This is knowledge, to rightly direct force currents, first in the 3 worlds of human endeavor, and then in the solar system. Love is the right apprehension of the uses and purposes of form and of the energies involved in form building, the utilization of form, and the eventual dissipation of the superseded form. It involves a realization of the laws of attraction and repulsion, of the magnetic interplay between all forms, great and small, of group relationships, of the galvanizing power of the unifying life, and the attractive power of one unit upon another, be it atom, man, or solar system. It involves an understanding of all forms, form purposes, and form relationships. It concerns the building processes in man himself and in the solar system, and it necessitates the development of those powers within man which will make him a conscious builder, a solar Petri of a coming cycle. Page 882. This is one of the great revelations at initiation, the unveiling to the initiate of the particular cosmic center whence emanates the type of force or energy which he, the initiate, will be concerned with when he becomes in due course of time a solar Petri or divine Manasaputra to a coming humanity. Hence he must have not only knowledge but the energy of love likewise to enable him to perform the function of linking the higher three and the lower four of a future race of men at some distant period, thus permitting of their individualizing through the sacrifice of his own fully conscious middle principle. Sacrifice involves even more than what has been already pointed out. It involves the following factors. A. Knowledge of the purposes and intentions of the planetary logos. B. Realization of the particular and peculiar type of energy and of the quality of his own ray lord. C. Comprehension of the different groups of existences who are participating in planetary evolution and in solar manifestation. D. A revelation as to certain cosmic enterprises in which our planetary logos is acting as an intelligent cooperator. Thus is brought in the factor of extra systemic force. When all these and other factors are considered, it is evident that the energy set loose in sacrifice to these plans and intentions involves such a vast field of comprehending wisdom that it is not possible for the average man ever to sense it. It deals with the purposes and plans of the silent watchers over the three planes, the five and the seven. It deals with the dynamic force of the great destroying angels on all the planes who will eventually, through the manipulation of the three forms of energy, bring to an end all that is. These angels are a mysterious group of thohatic lives who sound forth the trumpets of destruction and by means of the notes sounded produce that shattering which will set loose the energy of forms. Page 883. The second point is very briefly given. It concerns the innermost circle of petals, or that set of three petals, or those three streams of whirling energy which immediately surround the jewel in the lotus. Each of these three petals is related to one of the three circles and is organized as each of the three circles is unfolded. They form, therefore, a synthesis of knowledge, love, or sacrifice, and are closely connected through the type of force flowing through them with one of the three higher centers of the planetary logos of a man's particular ray. This central unit of threefold force is dealt with in a specific manner at initiation. At the first, second, and the third initiations, one of the three petals opens up, permitting an ever freer display of the central electric point. At the fourth initiation, the jewel, being completely revealed, through its blazing light, its intense radiatory heat, and its terrific outflow of force, produces the disintegration of the surrounding form, the shattering of the causal body, the destruction of the Temple of Solomon, and the dissolution of the lotus flower. The work of the initiator in this connection is very interesting. Through the medium of the rod of initiation and of certain words of power, he brings about results of a coordinating, transmuting, and liberating nature. Through the action of the rod as wielded at the first two initiations, the two outer circles unfold, the energy of the two is set free, and the two sets of force as embodied in the six petals are coordinated and become interactive. This stage of petal adjustment succeeds upon that called earlier unfoldment, and has to do with the simultaneous action of the two tiers of petals. The interplay between the two circles is completed and the circulation of the force currents perfected. Page 884. According to a man's ray and subray, so is the rod applied to what might be termed the key petal. This, of course, differs according to the unit of force involved. It is of interest to note here that as the petal substance is deva substance, and as the energy of the petals is the energy of certain manasa devas, one of the three higher orders of Agnishvatas, the initiate is overshadowed. The word is not entirely satisfactory in explaining the type of deva service here necessitated, but it must suffice. By a great deva who represents the equilibrium of substantial vibration, which is brought about by the efforts of the initiate, aided by the adepts who present him and who each represent one of the two polarities of force. This is temporarily stabilized by the initiator. These three factors, 1, the representing deva, 2, the two adepts, 3, the initiator, form, for a brief second, a triangle of force with the initiate at the center. Through them circulates the terrific power, the fire from heaven, which is brought down from the higher triad through the agency of the electrical rod. This application of extra egoic force is in itself of a threefold nature, as symbolized by the three protective agencies and the threefold nature of the rod itself. It emanates in a primary sense from the planetary locus of a man's ray, and proceeds from that one of the planetary centers which corresponds to either the head, heart, or throat center in a human unit. This energy is applied to the corresponding tier of petals, and to the corresponding petal in a tier according to the initiation taken, and according to the primary and secondary ray. A close connection can be traced here between the petals and the centers on the etheric level of the physical plane, and thus it can be seen how, when the necessary work is done, it is possible to have a direct transmission of force from the higher planes to the lower in the following order: A, from the logoic center or the planetary logos to the monad on its own plane, page 885. B, from that monad to one of the three tiers of petals according to the aspect or ray concerned. C, from the tier of petals viewed as a unit to one of the petals in the circle, according to the quality and type of force using the petal as a transmitting agency. D, from the particular petal in which the force is momentarily centered to one of the permanent atoms, again according to ray and type of force. E, from the permanent atom via the atomic triangle and the mental and astral centers to that one of the three higher centers in the etheric body particularly concerned. F, from the etheric center to the physical brain. We have here put very briefly the process of force transmission from the monad to man on the physical plane, and hence it will be apparent why the emphasis is so consistently laid upon the necessity for bodily purity in all the three bodies, and upon the alignment of those bodies so that the flow of force may be unimpeded. The effects of this downflow of force may be viewed in a twofold manner, that is, in a material and in a psychic sense. The material effect, or the result of this stimulation upon the forms and upon the atoms in the forms, is to render them radioactive, or to set loose the energy of substance. This is the liberating of the energy imprisoned within the form, and concerns the Brahma aspect and the evolution of matter itself, page 886. It affects the lunar bodies and therefore relates to the lunar lords or petries, causing a weakening of their hold upon the lesser builders, bringing them more under the force streams from the solar angels, and leading to a situation which will eventually result in a return of the lunar petries of all degrees to the central point for force substance. In a psychic sense, the result of the downflow is a stimulation of consciousness and the acquisition, through that stimulation, of the psychic powers latent in man. His three higher physical centers, the pineal gland, the pituitary body, and the ulterior major center, are affected, and man becomes psychically aware in the physical brain of the higher influences, happenings, and powers. According to the ray concerned, so is the center affected. The force of the lunar lords, which has succeeded in keeping these three organs quiescent, is superseded, and the solar angels pour in their energy. All this, again, is closely connected with the threefold energy of the physical body and produces effects within the spinal column, which arouses the kundalini fire at the base of the spine, causing it to mount along the triple spinal channel, again, according to ray and aspect involved. More and then this may not here be said, as the dangers of a premature knowledge along this line are far greater than the dangers of ignorance. Suffice it to point out that the fires at the lower centers, those below the diaphragm, have, by the time the second initiation is reached, usually mounted to the center between the shoulder blades. At the second initiation, they rise as far as the head, and all the fires of the torso are then active. All that remains then to do is to centralize them, to produce the necessary geometrical interplay between the seven head centers, and then to focus them all prior to the final liberation in the highest center of all. Page 887. 4. The Fire Elementals, the Lesser Builders. A. Introductory. It will be apparent now that in our consideration of the Deva builders, great and small, of the solar system, we have hitherto practically confined ourselves to those who are the functioning agents in the three worlds of human endeavor. We have dealt briefly with the builders on the evolutionary arc, the greater entities who either have passed through the human kingdom and therefore have left that stage of evolution behind them in earlier cycles, or are at this time the solar agents of human manifestation. All these forms of divine existence represent in their own place aspects of positive force. We come now to the consideration of the lesser builders in the three worlds, those who represent the negative aspect of force, being on the involutionary arc, and who are therefore the recipients of energy and influences. They are worked upon by energy, and through the activity of the greater builders, are forced into different directions in space, being built into the differing forms. The energy that works upon them, as is well known, emanates from the second aspect, and in their totality they form the Great Mother. I would call to the attention of all students the fact that these lesser builders are literally a sea of fire upon which the great breath, or the Aum, takes effect. Each fiery spark, or atom, becomes, through the action of the word, vitalized with new life and impregnated with a different type of energy. In the union of the life of atomic substance itself with that which causes the atoms to cohere and to form vehicles of some kind or another can be seen demonstrating the Son of God. Herein lies the essential duality of all manifestation. This duality is later supplemented by the life of the one who sounds the word. Thus is the cosmic incarnation brought about with the three factors entering in. This has been sufficiently dealt with in earlier pages. Page 888. Much that will have to be said will be of a tabulatory nature, and the only way in which students can check up the approximate accuracy of that which is imparted will be through a careful meditation upon A. the law of correspondences, B. the realizable probabilities, C. the indications in occult literature of a corroborative nature. Students should remember that we are dealing with involutionary substance, or atomic matter. This atomic matter is living substance, each atom being a tiny life palpitating with the vitality of the third locus. These lives, being negative energy, are responsive to their polar opposite and can, under the law of attraction and repulsion, be built into forms which are the expression of the second aspect. Eventually, the forms themselves become in their turn negative and responsive to still another type of force, becoming recipients of the life of the first logos when the fourth or human kingdom is reached. This treatise seeks to prove that in the fourth kingdom the three fires meet. A. Fire by friction, or the negative Brahma aspect, the third aspect. B. Solar fire, or the positive negative Vishnu aspect, the second aspect. C. Electric fire, or the positive Shiva aspect, the first aspect. Man in the three worlds, consciously or unconsciously, recapitulates the logoic process and becomes a creator, working in substance through the factor of his positive energy. He wills, he thinks, he speaks, and thought forms eventuate. Atomic substance is attracted to the enunciator. The tiny lives which compose that substance are forced through the energy of the thinker into forms which are themselves active, vitalized, and powerful. Page 889. What man builds is either a beneficent or a maleficent creation, according to the underlying desire, motive, or purpose. It is essential that we endeavor to make practical what is here to be imparted, as it is useless for man to study the groups of lesser builders, their functions, and their names, unless he realizes that with many of them he has an intimate connection, being himself one of the great builders and a creator within the planetary scheme. Men should remember that through the power of their thoughts and their spoken words, they definitely produce effects upon other human beings functioning on the three planes of human evolution and upon the entire animal kingdom. The separative and maleficent thoughts of man are largely responsible for the savage nature of wild beasts and the destructive quality of some of nature's processes, including certain phenomena such as plague and famine. It is of no value to man to know the names of some of the army of the voice unless he comprehends his relationship to that army, unless he apprehends the responsibility which is his to be a beneficent creator, working under the law of love and not impelled to the creative act through selfish desire or uncontrolled activity. B. Physical plane elementals. It should be remembered that the devas we have been considering are the originators of impulse and the manipulators of energy in their own degree and on their own plane. In connection with them are to be found, therefore, the recipients of force or the multitude of lives of an elemental nature which form the sum total of the matter of a plane. These are swept on waves of energy through the impulse of the breath and as the result of vibratory action into all forms as we know them on the physical plane. Page 890. Therefore, in connection with manifestation on the physical plane, the devas may be divided into three groups. 1. The transmitters of the will of God, the originators of activity in deva substance. These are the greater builders in their various groups. 2. The manipulators of the initiated energy. These are the myriads of workers with force who transmit the impulse in their turn to the elemental essence. They are the builders of lesser degree, but are on the evolutionary arc, as are the first group. 3. The recipients of force, the sum total of the living substance of a plane. These lives are passive in the hands of the builders of greater degree. The three groups to be considered are 1. The elementals of densest matter, 2. The elementals of liquid matter, 3. The elementals of gaseous matter. We must bear in mind as we study these three groups that we are not concerned with the transmitters, but with the manipulators and with the recipients of energy. The elementals of densest matter. These are the workers and builders which are concerned with the tangible and objective part of all manifestation. In their totality, they literally form that which can be touched, seen, and contacted physically by man. In considering these matters, we must never dissociate the various groups in our minds in a too literal sense, for they all interpenetrate and blend in the same manner as man's physical body is compounded of dense, liquid, gaseous, and etheric matter. Diversity producing a unity is everywhere to be seen. This fact must constantly be borne in mind by the occult student when studying the subhuman forms of existence. Page 891. There is a distinct danger in all tabulations, for they tend to the forming of hard and fast divisions, whereas unity pervades all. Among the manipulating devas of the lowest level of the dense physical plane are to be found certain subterranean forms of existence, of which hints are to be found in the ancient and occult books. There is to be found in the very bowels of the earth an evolution of a peculiar nature with a close resemblance to the human. They have bodies of a peculiarly gross kind, which might be regarded as distinctly physical as we understand the term. They dwell in settlements or groups under a form of government suited to their needs in the central caves several miles below the crust of the earth. Their work is closely connected with the mineral kingdom, and the Agni Shaitans of the central fires are under their control. Their bodies are constituted so as to stand much pressure, and they are not dependent upon as free a circulation of air as man is, nor do they resent the great heat to be found in the earth's interior. Little can here be communicated anent these existences, for they are connected with the lesser vital portions of the physical body of the planetary Logos, finding their microcosmic correspondence in the feet and legs of a man. They are one of the factors which make possible the revolutionary progressive activity of a planet. Allied with them are several other groups of low-class entities whose place in the scheme of things can only be described as having relation to the grosser planetary functions. Little is gained by enlarging upon these lives and their work. It is not possible for man in any way to contact them, nor would it be desirable. When they have pursued their evolutionary cycle, they will take their place in a later cycle in the ranks of certain deva bodies that are related to the animal kingdom. Page 892. It is commonly supposed that all the fairies, gnomes, elves, and like nature spirits are to be found solely in etheric matter, but this is not so. They are to be found in bodies of gaseous and liquid substance likewise, but the mistake has arisen for the reason that the basis of all that which can be objectively seen is the etheric structure, and these little busy lives frequently protect their dense physical activities through the agency of glamour and cast a veil over their objective manifestation. When etheric vision is present, then they can be seen, for the glamour, as we understand it, is only a veil over that which is tangible. Students must at this juncture remember that all dense physical forms, whether of a tree, an animal, a mineral, a drop of water, or a precious stone, are in themselves elemental lives constructed of living substance by the aid of living manipulators, acting under the direction of intelligent architects. It will immediately become apparent why it is not possible in any way to tabulate in connection with this particular lowest group. A beautiful diamond, a stately tree, or a fish in the water are but devas, after all. It is the recognition of this essential livingness which constitutes the basic fact in all occult investigation, and is the secret of all beneficent magic. It is not my purpose, therefore, to deal more specifically with these lowest forms of divine life, except to impart two facts, and thus give indication of the solution of two problems which have oft disturbed the average student. These are, first, the problem as to the purpose of all reptilian life, and secondly, the specific connection of the bird evolution with the deva kingdom. The secret of the reptile kingdom is one of the mysteries of the second round, and there is a profound significance connected with the expression, the serpents of wisdom, which is applied to all adepts of the good law. Page 893. The reptile kingdom has an interesting place in all mythologies and all ancient forms of truth impartation, and this for no arbitrary reason. It is not possible to enlarge upon the underlying truth which is hidden in the karmic history of our planetary Logos, and is revealed as part of the teaching given to initiates of the second degree. End of side one, cassette number 21, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 893. Continued on side two. Side two, cassette number 21, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section two, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 893. The second great life impulse, or life wave, initiated by our planetary logos, when brought in conjunction with the first, was the basis of that activity which we call evolutionary energy. It resulted in a gradual unrolling, or revelation, of the divine form. The heavenly serpent manifested, being produced out of the egg, and began its convolutions, gaining in strength and majesty, and producing through its immense fecundity millions of lesser serpents. The reptile kingdom is the most important part of the animal kingdom in certain aspects, if such an apparently contradictory statement can be made. For all animal life can be seen passing through it during the prenatal stage, or returning to it when the form is in advanced decomposition. The connection is not purely a physical one, but it is also psychic. When the real nature and method of the Kundalini, or serpent fire, is known, this relation will be better understood, and the history of the second round assume a new importance. The secret of life lies hidden in the serpent stage, not the life of the spirit, but the life of the soul, and this will be revealed as the serpent of the astral light is truly approached and duly studied. One of the four Lipika lords who stand nearest to our planetary logos is called the living serpent, and his emblem is a serpent of blue with one eye in the form of a ruby in its head. Students who care to carry the symbology a little further can connect this idea with the eye of Shiva, which sees and knows all and records all, as does the human eye in lesser degree. All is photographed upon the astral light as the human eye receives impressions upon the retina. Page 894. The same thought is frequently conveyed in the Christian Bible, in the Hebrew and Christian recognition of the all-seeing eye of God. The application and value of the hints here given may be apparent if the subject of the third eye is studied and its relation to the spine and the spinal currents investigated. This third eye is one of the objects of kundalinic vivification, and in the spinal territory, there is first the center at the base of the spine, the home of the sleeping fire. Next, we have the triple channel along which that fire will travel in due course of evolution. And finally, we find at the summit of the column and surmounting all, that small organ called the pineal gland, which, when vivified, causes the third eye to open, and the beauties of the higher, subtler planes to stand revealed. All this physical, psychical occurrence is possible to man owing to certain events which happen to the heavenly serpent in the second or serpent round. These happenings necessitated the formation and evolution of that peculiar and mysterious family we call the reptilian. These forms of divine life are very intimately connected with the second planetary scheme, being responsive to energy emanating from that scheme and reaching the Earth via the second globe in the second chain. A group of special devas, connected with a particular open sound in the planetary word, work with the reptile evolution. It should be noted here that this evolution on the etheric planes has a closer effect upon man than on the physical. If students will apply themselves to the consideration of these facts, to the investigation of the serpent lore in all lands, mythologies and scriptures, and if they will link up all this knowledge with that concerning those heavenly constellations which have a serpent appellation, such as, for instance, the dragon, much illumination may come. Page 895. If the intuition suffices, knowledge may then be imparted which will make clearer the connection between the physical bodies with their centers and the psychic nature. The bird kingdom is specifically allied to the deva evolution. It is the bridging kingdom between the purely deva evolution and two other manifestations of life. First, certain groups of devas who desire to pass into the human kingdom, having developed certain faculties, can do so via the bird kingdom, and certain devas who wish to get in communication with human beings can do so via the bird kingdom. This truth is hinted at in the Christian Bible and Christian religious representations by angels or devas being frequently represented as having wings. These cases are not many, as the usual method is for the devas gradually to work themselves towards individualization through expansive feeling. But in the cases which do occur, these devas pass several cycles in the bird kingdom, building in a response to a vibration which will ultimately swing them into the human family. In this way, they become accustomed to the use of a gross form without the limitations and impurities which the animal kingdom engenders. Second, many devas pass out of the group of passive lives in the effort to become manipulating lives via the bird kingdom, and before becoming fairies, elves, gnomes, or other sprites, pass a certain number of cycles in the bird realm. Why the two above events occur will not be apparent to the casual reader, nor will the true connection between the birds and the devas be accurately realized by the occult student unless he applies himself to the consideration of the bird or swan out of time and space and the place that birds play in the mysteries. Herein lies for him the clue. He must remember likewise the fact that every life of every degree, from a god to the most insignificant of the lesser devas or builders, must at some time or another pass through the human family. Page 896. As H.P.B. has pointed out, birds and serpents are closely connected with wisdom, and therefore with the psychic nature of god, of men, and of devas. The study of mythology should reveal certain stages and relationships which will make this matter clearer. The elementals and lesser devas of liquid matter. A very interesting illustration of the interpenetration of all the living matter of creation can be seen in connection with the atmosphere surrounding our planet. In it is to be found A. moisture, or those living essences which are the liquid elementals. B. gaseous substance, or those lives which are linked to all fiery essences, being volatile and the result of heat. C. etheric matter, or the lowest orders of the devas of the ethers. This major triplicity, when in conjunction, produces that which we breathe, and that in which we live and move and have our being. To the thoughtful student, the air is full of symbology, for it is a synthesis, and that which bridges the higher and the lower strata of manifestation. We must center our attention first upon those lives which constitute the sum total of all that is watery and liquid throughout manifestation, and in dealing with this, we must remember that we are concerned with the most occult of investigations, and with matters which are very closely connected with man's evolution. The many groups of the water devas of the manipulatory class have been roughly grouped by mythological writers under the terms undines, mermaids, and other expressions, but their diversity is great, and this will be necessarily apparent when it is remembered that the sum total of water upon the earth, oceans, seas, rivers, lakes, and streams, far exceeds the dry portion or land, and every drop of moisture is in itself a tiny life, fulfilling its function and running its cycle. Page 897. The mythic forms above referred to are but those myriad lives built into a form through which an evolutionary deva is seeking expression. The extreme interest of this subject might be expressed under certain statements which will give the student some idea of the close attention which should and eventually will be paid to this subject of the deva lives of watery manifestation. As said above, the aggregate of these lives is greater than the aggregate of those lives which form the sum total of solid earth, as we understand the term, even though they do not exceed the number of lives which form the gaseous portion of manifestation. This gaseous portion is found in the atmosphere, interpenetrating dense matter and filling in a large degree the interior caverns of the planet. The microcosmic resemblance to the great life of the planet is seen in the fact that both forms are but outer sheaths or frameworks, sheltering an inner vault. Both forms are hollow, both have their negative and positive extremities, their poles, so to speak, and internally much proceeds affecting the outer evolutions. One of the most occult of the planets, Neptune, presides over the devas of the waters. their presiding Deva Lord, Varuna, the Raja of the astral plane, being an emanation from that planet. Students will find it of profound interest to study the close interaction, therefore, between 1. The sixth plane, the astral plane, and the sixth subplane of the physical plane, the liquid subplane. 2. The sixth subplane of each plane in the solar system and their relation to each other. Page 898. Herein will be found one reason why men of a relatively low type of physical body and having an astral body with some sixth subplane matter in it are responsive to higher things and have a spiritual aspiration. The influence emanating from the sixth subplane of the Buddhic plane calls out a reciprocal response from the sixth subplane matter in other bodies, and the sixth principle of Buddhi, under the law of correspondences, intensifies that vibration. The name Neptune is one under which the planetary logos of one of the major three schemes is known upon our planet. Certain of his influences and energies affect paramountly the Deva essence of this sixth subplane matter, reaching them via the Raja Lord Varuna. This knowledge is of practical value astrologically, for it will enable men to understand the nature of their own physical bodies, and above all, of their astral bodies. It is an occult fact that the type of astral matter in a man's body decides the quality of the watery substance of his physical body. There is, in occultism, no dissociating the physico-psychic natures, for the latter determines the former. The planet Neptune, therefore, has a profound effect and a close connection under the law of correspondences with the sixth or astral plane, which is the plane of the liquid portion of the logoic physical body, with the sixth subplane of the physical plane, or with the liquid portion of the human physical body and of the planetary physical body, also with the sixth type of energy or force, or the sixth ray. The major scheme over which Neptune presides forms a systemic triangle of great interest for esoteric astrologers, with the sixth scheme and one other. This is symbolized in the three-pronged trident which the god Neptune is always portrayed as holding, the prongs being literally the symbolic triangles connected with each other by three lines of force. Page 899. This planet has also a vital relation to the sixth logoic principle, or Buddhi, and therefore the sixth principle of man. No man begins to coordinate the Buddhic vehicles until he comes under Neptunian influence in some life or another. When this is the case, his personality horoscope will show Neptunian influence dominating somewhere. The Neptunian scheme governs one of the three paths of return and gathers to itself eventually all those egos who attain primarily through the manipulation of the sixth type of energy, usually called devotion. It is Neptunian influence likewise which presides over and makes possible the second initiation, wherein the initiate produces results in the astral body, and wherein his astral centers are the object of the Hierophant's attention. This particular type of energy flows through three centers: A, that particular head center which is linked to the heart center; B, the heart center; C, the solar plexus. The planet Neptune, along with the planetary logos of the sixth ray, controls the astral centers in man. This statement involves much esoteric macrocosmic significance. When it is remembered that all centers, human and divine, are composed of Deva essence, the connection between this influence and the Devas and their reflex effect upon man will immediately become apparent. In the mystery of the sea and the secret of its occult drying up or absorption will be revealed eventually the significance underlying A, the sex impulse macrocosmically and microcosmically interpreted; B, the cessation of desire; C, the direction of fire to the throat center instead of to the generative organs; D, pralaya and obscuration; E, the meaning of the words "there shall be no more sea" found in the Christian Bible. Page 900. When meditating upon these thoughts, students will find it well to bear in mind the fact that Neptune is one of the major or synthesizing planets, that it is an absorbing or abstracting planet, and that it is connected with the process whereby eventual perfection is demonstrated. The sun is made perfect, and the cosmic incarnation is brought to a close. There is again a very close esoteric connection between the fact lying behind the biblical words, "The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters," and the ordered lawful activity of the Great Mother as she performs her work of body building under the impulse of desire. The true relation between the astral plane and the physical plane will only become apparent as students carefully bear in mind that the astral plane of the solar system is the sixth subplane of the cosmic physical plane and constitutes the sum total of the liquid substance of the logoic physical body. When this is realized, the work of the Deva essence takes due place. The factor of desire or of astral motion and its reflex action upon the physical body via the sixth subplane will become apparent, and the Great Mother will be seen actively engaged under the influence of desire in the work of building, nourishing, and producing that warmth and moisture which make manifestation possible. The Mother is the greatest of the Devas and closely linked with the Devas of the waters, for moisture of some kind or another is an essential to all life. Page 901. The sixth principle, therefore, or the love aspect, the Christ principle, and the sixth plane are connected. There is an interplay of energy between the fourth cosmic ether, or buddhic energy, and the sixth plane, or astral energy. The Devas on both these planes belong essentially to groups over which Neptunian influence presides. Hence, the astral plane can, and eventually will, directly reflect the buddhic. The greater building Devas on the second plane of the solar system, the monadic plane or the second cosmic ether, direct the energies of the manipulating Devas of the fourth cosmic ether, the buddhic plane. The manipulating Devas of the fourth cosmic ether will, in due course of evolution, work out the plan in objective perfection through the medium of the living substance of the lesser Devas of the liquid or astral plane. When they have done this, two results will be seen. First, the astral plane will perfectly reflect the buddhic plane, and secondly, the result of that will be that the physical plane will produce the exact vehicle needed for microcosmic or macrocosmic expression through the force of water or desire. All this is revealed to esotericists in the symbology of the circulatory system in man. As the blood system with its two types of channels, arteries and veins, and its two types of builders, the red and white corpuscles, is studied from the occult standpoint, much will be ascertained of a revolutionary nature. The laws of the path of outgoing and of the path of return, with the two groups of Deva lives therein concerned, will be apprehended by man. A further hint may here be given. In the physical body of man, in connection with the circulatory system, we find in the three factors, the heart, the arteries, and the veins, the clue to the three types of Devas, and also to the systemic triangle which they represent, and further to the three modes of divine expression. Page 902. There is a planetary as well as a systemic circulation, and it is carried on through the medium of Deva substance everywhere, macrocosmically as well as microcosmically. The Devas of the sixth physical subplane can be divided into three groups, and these again into seven and into 49, thus corresponding with all groups in the solar system. These groups, in their essential nature, respond to that which lies above more than that which lies below, which is only an occult way of expressing a relationship of an intimate nature between the Devas of fire and the Devas of water, and a negation of a close connection between the water Devas and the earth. Occultly expressed, through the action of the fire Devas, the water Devas find liberation. The Devas of water find for themselves the path of service in their great work of nourishing all the vegetable and animal life upon the planet. The goal for them is to enter into that higher group of Devas which we call the gaseous or fire Devas. These, through the action of their fire upon the waters, produce that sequence of evaporation, condensation, and eventual precipitation which, through its constant activity, nourishes all life upon the earth. Thus again can the psychic laws of love be seen at work in the Deva kingdom as in the human. First, the withdrawal or segregation of the unit from the group, called individualization in man and evaporation in the water realm. Next, condensation, or the amalgamation of the unit with a newer or higher group. This we call condensation for the devas of the waters and initiation in man. Finally, the sacrifice of the group of human or deva atoms to the good of the whole. So does the law of service and sacrifice govern all the second aspect divine in all its departments, great or small. Such is the law. Page 903. But in the human kingdom, though love is the fulfilling of the law, it is arrived at along the path of pain and sorrow, and every true lover and server of humanity is stretched upon the cross until for them the sixth principle dominates and the sixth type of matter in their bodies is completely subjected to the higher energy. Footnote: measure thy life by loss instead of gain, not by the wine drunk, but by the wine poured forth. For love's strength standeth in love's sacrifice, and he who suffers most has most to give. The Disciples by Mrs. Hamilton King, returned text. In the case of the devas, love is the fulfilling of the law without pain or sorrow. It is for them the line of least resistance, for they are the mother aspect, the feminine side of manifestation, and the easy path for them is to give, to nourish, and to tend. Therefore, the devas of the waters pour themselves out in service to the vegetable and animal kingdoms, and in the transmutative fires, all that holds them on the sixth subplane will eventually be overcome, and through occult distillation and evaporation, these devas will eventually form part of the gaseous fiery group and become those fires which are the basis of the divine alchemy. Speaking generally, it must be remembered that the earth devas of densest matter become, in the course of evolution, the devas of the waters, and find their way eventually onto the astral plane, the cosmic liquid. The devas of the waters of the physical plane find their way, through service, onto the gaseous subplane, and then to the cosmic gaseous, becoming the devas of the mental plane. This literally and occultly constitutes the transmutation of desire into thought. The gaseous devas become eventually the devas of the fourth ether, and from thence in long eons find their way to the cosmic fourth ether, the Buddhic plane. These three groups are therefore cosmically connected with 1. The cosmic astral plane and the constellation whence emotional and desire energy originates, 2. The cosmic mental plane and therefore with the constellation Sirius, 3. The cosmic Buddhic plane and the constellation of the Pleiades. Page 904. Thus can the whole process be worked out if man carefully studies his own nature and the law of analogy. The devas of the gaseous subplane. In dealing with the elementals or lesser devas, under the manipulatory devas of this extensive group, we are dealing with the devas of fire and with the fiery essences of substantial nature which can be seen manifesting in myriads of forms. Certain of the subdivisions of this group are known to students, such as the salamanders, or the fiery lives which can be seen by clairvoyants leaping in the flames of a furnace or of a volcano. This group can be subdivided into 4 groups according to color: red, orange, yellow, and violet, the last of which approximate very closely to the devas of the fourth ether. The Agni Shaitans. This is a term applied to the fiery lives, which are the sum total of the plane substance, as seen in the first part of our treatise, and also to the tiny essences which compose the fires of manifestation. As the nature of physical plane electricity is understood and studied, and its true condition realized, the reality of the existence of these Agni Shaitans will stand revealed. As the race becomes clairvoyant, as it surely will in a great degree before the close of this root race, these gaseous devas will stand revealed, and men will realize that they are working with fiery lives, and that they are themselves closely allied to these lives through the fires of their own bodies. The clairvoyance which is in process of developing in this root race is entirely physical, and under the law its development is to be anticipated, for the Aryan root race is that one wherein man, in this fourth round, comes to full self-consciousness. Page 905. This involves complete physical vision and the use in perfection of the three physical plane senses of hearing, touch, and sight. In the next root race, astral clairvoyance will be prevalent, though not universal, and thus contact with the buddhic plane will be more easily achieved. In the earlier root races of the next round, the fifth, there will be a recapitulation of the activities of this round, until in the fifth root race, the sum total of that achieved in this round will be seen. Men will then begin to demonstrate mental clairvoyance. Thus the cycles mingle and overlap in order that no unit of life, however small and unimportant, may fail in opportunity. These Agni Shaitans of the third subplane come particularly under the influence of Saturnian energy. They are the great fusers of substance, and it is in connection with them that the transmutation of metals becomes possible. They have a relationship to the mineral kingdom analogous to that which the watery devas have to the vegetable and animal. They are, as will be apparent, connected with the throat center of a planetary locus and of a solar locus, and it is through their activity that the transmission of sound through the air becomes possible. It might surprise students and inventors, could they but realize that the present rapid growth of wireless communication everywhere is due to the swinging into contact with the human vibration of a group of fiery deva lives hitherto uncontacted. Just as each plane has its seven subplanes, so likewise each subplane can be subdivided, thus making 49 fires on every plane, or the 343 fires of the solar system. Herein can be found the clue to the mystery of the fourth between the three, which has at times bewildered students of the occult records. Page 906. There are several ways of reading these figures, 3, 4, 3, but the only occult method which can be hinted at here lies in the recognition of the three higher planes, the three lower planes, the fourth plane of meeting between them. This fourth plane has occultly been called the meeting place. When it is remembered that the goal for these gaseous devas is the fourth cosmic ether, or the buddhic plane, and that they, in their major and minor groups, are the internal macrocosmic and microcosmic fires, some idea may be gained as to the true significance of the eventual at-one-ment between the two lines of evolution, for the goal for man, likewise, is the buddhic plane. On the third subplane, therefore, in its fifth division of deva essences, certain groups are now being contacted in this, the fifth root race. The result of this contact can be seen in the stimulation of responsive vibration, which is demonstrated already in the discovery of wireless intercourse and of radium. There will also be seen a paralleling increased vibration of the human spirille, which will result, before the end of the round, in the awakening to full activity of the fifth spirilla of the human physical permanent atom. Hence, the work of the Mahachohan at this time, in connection with seventh ray, which is temporarily acting as the synthesis of the five types of energy over which he presides, might be summed up as follows. First, he is utilizing the seventh type of energy in order to further the recognition by the human unit of the subtler substance of the physical plane. This seventh ray is a primary factor in the production of objectivity. The energy of the planetary logos of the seventh scheme dominates the seventh plane. It is the ray whereon deva substance and spirit can meet and adapt themselves to each other with greater facility than on any other ray except the third. Page 907. Man at present is fully conscious, through some one or other of his senses, on the three lower subplanes. It is intended that he shall be equally conscious on the four higher. This has to be brought about by the stimulation of the deva substance which composes his bodies. This will be accomplished through the dynamic will of the transmitting devas as they energize the manipulatory devas and thus affect the myriads of lesser lives which compose man's body, and also by an increased responsiveness of the indwelling man or thinker to the contact made upon his body. This increased awareness will be brought about by the arousing of the fifth spirilla, by the unfolding of the fifth petal in the egoic lotus, and by the gradual opening of the third eye, through the arousing and uniform activity of five factors: the center at the base of the spine, the three channels in the spinal column, and the pineal gland. All these factors involve the activity of deva essence, plus the resultant awareness of the thinker. This will be followed by the conscious use of the newly awakened powers. In this manner, the close interrelation and interdependence of the two lines of evolution becomes magnificently apparent. Second, the Mahachohan is working specifically at this time, in cooperation with the Manu, with the devas of the gaseous subplane. This is in connection with the destroying work they are to effect by the end of this root race, in order to liberate spirit from constricting forms. Volcanic action, therefore, may be looked for, demonstrating in unexpected localities as well as within the sphere of the present earthquake and volcanic zones. Serious disturbance may be looked for in California before the end of the century, and in Alaska likewise. The work of the Mahachohan can also be seen in the effect that the devas of the Kundalini fire are producing upon man. Page 908. These are a peculiar group of Agni Shaitans who have reached a stage of evolution which permits of their being separated off from their group into a group connected with a certain fire in man's bodies. This fire, owing to its present activity and the direction of that activity, is responsible for the reaction against physical marriage and for the desire evinced by highly evolved men everywhere to evade the marriage relation and confine themselves to creation upon the mental or astral planes. This is due to the present inclination of the manipulatory devas of the lower generative organs to seek the throat center and to function there, utilizing the strength of the Kundalini fire to bring this about. All this is under the law of evolution, but in the interim, between cause and justified effect, much harm, evasion of the law, and consequent suffering can be seen. Owing therefore to the violent reaction at this time against the safeguarding laws of civilization, it has been decided that the nature and functions of the devas must be somewhat revealed to man, and that their place in the scheme of things and man's close connection and dependence upon them must be given out. Footnote: if man can be brought to a realization of the nature of his own being and of his constitution, and can be led to comprehend the rationale of that which can be seen occurring, and if the thinkers of the race can be shown the risks incident upon present happenings in the deva evolution, much danger may be averted. Hence the decision to extend the scope of this book to include more detailed information anent the deva evolution. Return to text. At the same time, the means whereby they can be contacted and the words whereby they can be controlled will be withheld. Laxness in the marriage relation, due to this particular cause, is only seen amongst the highly evolved and amongst the independent thinkers of the race. Similar laxness amongst the masses and the low types of humanity is based upon a different reason, and their promiscuity is due to certain developments of the animal nature in its lowest manifestation. These two causes will bear consideration by those who have the present needs of civilization at heart. Page 909. They can then cooperate with the Mahachohan in the work of effecting the very necessary transfer of force from a lower to a higher center, and prevent, through knowledge, the incidental license. This will bring about a refusal to besmirch the great love or sex impulse of nature. The ceremonial ray has been often called the marriage ritual of the sun, because upon this ray spirit and matter can meet and have union. This fact also should be borne in mind during the next 100 years, for they will see great changes in the marriage laws. The present laxity will inevitably bring a reaction, and the laws will become more stringent in order to safeguard the race during a transition period. These laws will not be along the line of making escape from the marriage relation more difficult, but will take effect at the other end, so to speak. The rising generation will be properly taught and guarded, and indiscriminate, hasty marriage will not be permitted, nor will juveniles be allowed rashly to enter into the marriage obligation. There is no need to enlarge further upon this, for in working out their own problems, men learn, and all that those upon the inner side are permitted to do is to give a hint or an indication. Another angle of the Mahachohan's work at this time is connected with sound, and therefore with the particular devas whom we are considering. Through the mismanagement of men and their unbalanced development, the sounds of earth, such as those of the great cities, of the manufactories, and of the implements of war, have brought about a very serious condition among the gaseous devas. This has to be offset in some way, and the future efforts of civilization will be directed towards the spreading of a revolt against the evils of congested living and to the dissemination of an impulse of a widespread nature to seek the country and wide spaces. Page 910. One of the main interests in the future will be a tendency towards the elimination of noise owing to the increased sensitiveness of the race. When the energy of water and of the atom is harnessed for the use of man, our present types of factories, our methods of navigation and of transportation, such as steamers and railway apparatus, will be entirely revolutionized. This will have a potent effect not only on man, but on the devas. C. The elementals of the ethers. We will consider now the etheric levels of the physical plane, or the four highest subplanes of the physical plane. These etheric levels are but gradations of physical plane matter of a rarer and more refined kind, but physical nevertheless. They are termed in most textbooks 1. The first ether or atomic matter, 2. The second ether or subatomic matter, 3. The third ether or superetheric matter, 4. The fourth ether or simply etheric matter. The fourth ether is the only one as yet recognized by scientists and is the subject of their present investigations, little though they may realize it. On the atomic subplane are the permanent physical atoms of all humanity and the appropriated atoms of the Deva kingdom. The Devas do not develop as do the human race. They reincarnate in groups and not as individuals, though each group is composed of units and has nothing of the nature of the involutionary group soul. The group soul on the involutionary path and that upon the evolutionary path are unlike. One is passing on to differentiation and is composed of entities animated by one general life. The other has differentiated, and each entity is a separate unit of the one life, complete in itself, yet one with the whole. Page 911. There are many types of life to be contacted on the four etheric levels, but we can only concern ourselves at present with the Deva life, remembering that the Deva evolution is of equal importance to that of the human. These Devas are many in number, are of involutionary and evolutionary nature, and of all grades and types. Ruling over them on the physical plane is the great Deva Kshiti. He is a Deva of rank and power equal to a Chohan of a ray. He presides over everything outside the human kingdom upon the physical plane, and he has for his council the four subordinate Deva lords of the four etheric levels. He, with these subordinate Devas, presides over a subsidiary council of seven Devas who handle all that concerns the Deva evolution and the work of the greater and the lesser builders. The Deva ruler of the fourth or lowest ether has delegated a member of his council to meet with certain of the masters at this time for two specific purposes. First, to see whether the approximation of the two lines of evolution, human and deva, might be now tentatively permitted, and secondly, to reveal some of the methods of healing and the causes of physical disability which are inherent in the etheric double. Devas of all kinds and colors are found on the physical etheric levels, but the prevailing hue is violet, hence the term so often employed, the devas of the shadows. With the coming in of the ceremonial ray of violet, we have the amplification, therefore, of the violet vibration, always inherent on these levels, and the great opportunity, therefore, for contact between the two kingdoms. It is in the development of etheric vision, which is a capacity of the physical human eye, and not in clairvoyance, that this mutual apprehension will become possible. With the coming in likewise of this ray will arrive those who belong thereon with a natural gift of seeing etherically. Children will frequently be born who will see etherically as easily as the average human being sees physically. As conditions of harmony gradually evolve out of the present world chaos, devas and human beings will meet as friends. Page 912. As the two planes, astral and physical, merge and blend, and continuity of consciousness is experienced upon the two, it will be difficult for human beings to differentiate at first between devas of the astral plane and those of the physical. At the beginning of this period of recognition, men will principally contact the violet devas, for those of the higher ranks amongst them are definitely making the attempt to contact the human. These devas of the shadows are of a dark purple on the fourth etheric level, of a lighter purple, much the same color as violet on the third etheric level, a light violet on the second, whilst on the atomic subplane they are of a glorious translucent lavender. Some of the groups of devas to be contacted on the physical plane are as follows. Four groups of violet devas associated with the etheric doubles of all that exists on the physical plane. These four are in two divisions, those associated with the building of the etheric doubles and those out of whose substance these doubles are built. The green devas of the vegetable kingdom. These exist in two divisions also. They are of high development and will be contacted principally along the lines of magnetization. The greater devas of this order preside over the magnetic spots of the earth, guard the solitude of the forests, reserve intact spaces on the planet which are required to be kept inviolate. They defend them from molestation, and with the violet devas are at this time working definitely, though temporarily, under the Lord Maitreya, the Raja Lord of the astral plane Varuna, and his brother Kshiti, have been called to the council chamber of the hierarchy for specific consultation, and just as the masters are endeavoring to prepare humanity for service when the world teacher comes, so these Raja lords are working along similar lines in connection with the devas. Page 913. They are arduous in their work, intense in their zeal, but much obstructed by man. The white devas of the air and water, who preside over the atmosphere, work with certain aspects of electrical phenomena and control the seas, rivers, and streams. From among them, at a certain stage in their evolution, are gathered the guardian angels of the race when in physical plane incarnation. Each unit of the human family has his guardian deva. Each group of devas has some specific method of development and some means whereby they evolve and attain a particular goal. For the violet devas, the path of attainment lies through feeling and through educating the race in the perfecting of the physical body in its two departments. For the green devas, the path of service is seen in magnetization, of which the human race knows nothing as yet. Through this power, they act as the protectors of the vegetable plant life and of the sacred spots of the earth. In their work lies the safety of man's body, for from the vegetable kingdom, for the remainder of this round, comes the nourishment of that body. For the white devas, the path of service lies in the guarding of the individuals of the human family, in the care and segregation of types, in the control of the water and air elementals, and much that concerns the fish kingdom. Thus, in the service of humanity in some form or another, lies attainment for these physical plane devas. They have much to give and do for humanity, and in time it will be apparent to the human unit what he has to give towards the perfecting of the deva kingdom. Page 914. A great hastening of their evolution goes forward now, coincident with that of the human family. End of side 2. Cassette number 21, Atreides on Cosmic Fire, page 914. Continued on cassette number 22.